Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is thought spotting and the numbers to call to get assistance on creating what you want in any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code and then 760-918-4300. And as always, I'll sort of set the table. But before I do, I want to talk again briefly. Those of you who listened to last week's show know that we're in the midst of a bit of a competition, which is going on till the 30th of March, 2010. And if you would like to get a copy or copies of my new book, Supercoach, 10 Secrets to Transform Anyone's Life from our very own Hay House Publishers, you also can get automatically a chance to win a coaching session with, among others, Dr. Robert Holden, Laura Berman Fortgang, Jennifer Loudon, and I think we've got 13, Barbara Scher, 13 or 14 of just some of the most wonderful coaches in the world. So if you want to find out more about that, go online to supercoachbook.com and you'll have all the information about that. This next bit's going to be a little bit obscure, so humor me. But I think it'll all make sense by the time we get through it. There's a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta called the Pirates of Penzance. Most people know it for the adaptation with Kevin Klein that came out about 20 years ago. But in it, the general saves his daughters. Actually, you know what? Other people know it from I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major General. That's where it's from. And in the operetta, the general says he saves his daughters from the clutches of the pirates by professing to be an orphan. And the pirates take pity and they leave. But then in the next scene, the general's seen weeping in a chapel. And when the reformed pirate Frederick asks him what the matter is, the general says that he lied about being an orphan, as witnessed by the tombs of his ancestors that fill the chapel. But Frederick points out that the general only recently bought the chapel, so he couldn't possibly be amongst his own ancestors. And the general says, well, in this chapel are ancestors. You cannot deny that. With the estate, I bought the chapel and its contents. I don't know whose ancestors they were, but I know whose ancestors they are now. Now, I always found it kind of funny that somebody would think that by buying someone else's family estate, he became part of that family. But it's something that we do all the time in our own heads. That is, we fill our minds with random thoughts and ideas about how the world is or how the world should be, but then we feel the burden of those thoughts as if they were actually our thoughts, whereas they actually just popped into our heads. I remember my daughter Maisie came into our bed when she was probably 6 or 7 years old, and she's crying that she dreamt that our cat had died and we had to bury her. And we tried to reassure her that it was okay, and the cat actually popped up on the bed to see her. But even that didn't calm her down. And nothing calmed her down until my wife agreed to remove the dream from Maisie's head. And for those of you not familiar with the process, it's fairly complex, but it's most effectively done through the ear, the removal of the dream, and a bit of struggle, and you can kind of pull out the dream. I talked to Maisie the next morning to see how she was doing, and she said that the dream had been successfully removed, but she was still able to imagine the cat dying, and that made her very, very sad. And therein lies the point. It's not the thoughts that pass through our head that impact our lives. It's the ones that we take ownership of and we think about all day long. So here's an example of the kind of thoughts that might go through your head in any given minute. Let's say you're on the way to work. Oh, I'm going to be late. I just know I'm going to be late. I shouldn't have eaten that extra piece of cake last night. God, I'm fat. Oh, I'm disgusting. No wonder nobody finds me attractive. God, ooh, they're gorgeous. I wonder what it would be like to be with someone like that. I bet it would be wonderful. Like, yeah, I got so much love inside me. What's the name of that song I heard on the radio last? Oh, God, I'm going to be late. In other words, it's fairly random. Some of the thoughts are more positive, some are more negative, but there's just a flow, a stream of internal dialogue. And in and of themselves, none of those thoughts are a problem. I mean, you might experience a slight boost in your energy when a happier thought floats by, and you might experience a slight dip in your mood when a negative thought passes through. But if the thoughts are just passing through and you don't think about them too much, the thought stream just flows quietly on in the background throughout your day, and it doesn't really affect how your day is going. When thoughts become a problem is when you step in and start to actively think about them. So let's begin that same thought stream we just had. Oh, I'm going to be late. Just know I'm going to be late. I shouldn't have eaten that extra piece of cake that night. Well, suddenly, what if we just hear that one? I shouldn't have eaten that extra piece of cake last night. Oh yeah, God, whew. Oh, I'm disgusting. Oh, God, no wonder nobody will ever find me attractive. Why is that? Why am I like this? You know, if only I had more willpower. I'm going to definitely go on that diet tomorrow, but what's the point? I never stick to anything. I'm such a loser. I need more cake. Now, I don't know if you've ever had that exact stream of thought, but you've probably had one like it, and it's pretty easy to see where that train of thought leads you and all the terrible feelings and potentially poor decisions that are going to follow on from it. The Toltec shaman, Don Miguel Ruiz, he talks about that as being hooked by a thought. And once we agree to give our attention to any given thought, to make that thought important, that thought becomes more and more real to us over time. And as it becomes more and more real to us, it has more and more power over our lives. So the trick, if you want a less stressful, more enjoyable life, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you do, it isn't to call in the thought police and try and control, I must think this, I must not think that, I must not allow in any of these thoughts. The trick is just to allow any and all thoughts to pass through your head unhindered. And if a negative thought passes through your head without your giving it a second thought, or a third thought, or a fourth thought, or a 50th thought, that thought really isn't going to have any impact on your life. But when you get hooked on a thought, you dwell on it, you make it important, you start to think about it, you claim it for your very own, then like the very model of a modern major general we talked about earlier, you become subject to the effects of that thought. So think about that for a few moments. If you want to call in, the number's to call 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. And let's go to the phones. Let's go to Maggie in Michigan. Maggie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm so glad you took my call.
Oh, well, so am I. What are we talking about?
Well, I had called in, it was maybe a month or two ago, and had talked about, you asked me what my dream was, and I told you that I wanted to start a learning center.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I still am, working at a low-paying job, but it provides insurance for my family. But recently, I took the bold step to approach my boss and request to only work 3 10-hour days a week instead of working 5 8-hour days a week to free up time in my schedule to work on other things that will increase my financial streams so that I'm more able to work on starting the learning center and doing the things that are my passion and my dream.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, I know that I can't start the Learning Center right now, but I would like to get together with other like-minded individuals who would like to join in this endeavor with me, and I'm wondering how to get those people. Who to reach out to?
Okay, so let me back up for a moment. So first off, well done for asking. Even better. I was going to ask, did your head explode?
No, but I was excited that I actually was bold enough to take that step.
I think it's wonderful. I have a money back guarantee. It's the only money back guarantee I offer, which is that if your head explodes when I ask somebody to actually ask somebody for something, then I will give them all their money back. I've never had to invoke it, but I always feel it's fair to ask. So well done. And that's great. You've actually done one of the most important things, which is you've created space.
Right.
And now the temptation is going to be to quickly go and fill all that space with lots of activity.
I'm feeling the temptation already.
Right. Because, oh my God, I've taken this time off and I can't just afford to take this time off. So I really need to. And you'll hear all those thoughts in your head. But if you start to hear them, you can just kind of smile at them and wave as they go by.
Okay.
Because there's the Nobel Prize winning scientist, James Watson, said, in order to achieve anything truly worthwhile, it's necessary to be slightly underemployed.
I like that quote.
And what I have always taken that to mean is, if I look at my life and I look at the lives of my clients, the coolest stuff that happened couldn't have been planned in a million trillion years. You know, it's the coincidences, it's the synchronicities, it's things unfolding as if by design. That can only happen when there's space. I was actually talking to a client recently who's taking on an amazing urban regeneration project in Israel. And he and I had talked about creating space for miracles in his life. You know, not pushing it so hard, not trying to book in every minute, not trying to overplan everything. And he sort of grudgingly went along, and then he told me a story of how he was in the back of a cab, and the cab driver just started chatting with him, you know, why are you here? And because he wasn't overemployed, because he didn't have 300 things that he had to get done in the cab on the way to his appointment, he just chatted to the cabbie, and he explained about what he was up to, and the guy said, oh, wow, that's really interesting. There's a, I actually am the driver for the woman who's with the government who's in charge of that. Would you like to meet her?
Oh, wow.
And because he wasn't overemployed and over busy and caught up in all the things he was supposed to be doing, he said, sure, that'd be great. And they wound up, the guy drove her right to this woman's house, and he went in and they had tea, and she's now one of the key advocates for the project. Now, I would defy anyone to put that on their business plan. How are you going to build a learning center, Maggie? Well, I'm going to be in the back of a cab, and I'm going to mention it, and the cab driver is going to take me to Warren Buffett's house, and he's going to fund it. You can't do that.
Exactly.
But what you can do, and what you've begun to do, is you can create the space for that to happen, and then you can speak about what you're up to. You can literally begin to speak it into being. One of my coaches, Steve Hardison, has a great metaphor. He talks about how candles are made. And what they do, this is in classical candle making, is they take a wick and they dip it in wax and they pull it out and they let it dry. And not very much wax sticks to it the first time. But the next time they dip it in, more wax sticks because now there's more surface area. And each time they re-dip the candle, more and more wax sticks to it until you have enough wax to shape it. Each time you go out and speak about what it is you're creating in the world, more wax is going to stick to it. It's going to become more solid. It's going to become more real, not just to you, but other people are going to be able to see it. They're going to begin to go, oh, I get it. Oh, that would be really cool. And first they'll be picturing in their minds, and then they'll begin to see some of the things that are actually tangibly in place. And before you know it, you'll have enough material there to really begin to go and go, well, I'd like this person. I don't want this person. I'd like this person. For now, the most powerful thing you can do, having created the space, is to be speaking it into being wherever you can. Hey, what are you up to? You know, and instead of saying, well, I've got this job. I don't really love it, but it pays the insurance. You go, oh, I'm creating a learning center. Oh, what's that? Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
That's going to do more for you than any specific advice I could give you about, well, call Barb Templeton over at such and such and such and such. Not that that wouldn't be great if I happened to know Barb Templeton over at such and such and such and such. but the fact is, the people in your life who will connect you to the people that you need to know are already in your life.
That's reassuring.
They just need to know what you're up to. It's the difference between, this is another distinction that I'll often share with clients. It's the difference between, this is what I'm up to. Would you like to be part of it? And boy, I sure would love it if you would be part of this, because then I could do it.
Yeah. The second one puts too much pressure.
It puts too much pressure, and it basically says to someone, hey, if you want to do this, I'd love to do it with you. Whereas the first one goes, hey, I'm doing this. Would you love to do it with me?
Yeah.
Now, the answer may still be no, but it's generally a supportive no. I was with somebody yesterday, and she was talking about an amazing project she's doing with Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama and these really cool people. And I, without her even asking, I gave her the names and arranged for her to be able to contact some other really cool people, because I just thought, what a cool project. I know people who'd love to be part of that.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you speak something into being. It becomes more and more real and more exciting until the people around you just want to be part of it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And like those people who are interested in the project and are interested in what I'm planning to speak into creation, I think that when I speak it, it will prick their ears, or that it will be something that, hey, that sounds cool. And they'll get excited about it.
I call it the perceptual snowplow. Because it's like once you're looking in a direction, it everything that doesn't fit in that direction starts to just get cleared away to the side, and you get a clearer and clearer path open up to it.
Yeah.
And so the more you talk about it, the stronger that perceptual snowplow becomes.
Right.
The clearer your vision becomes for you, but also the clearer it becomes for others, the easier it is to participate for others.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'm very excited. Well done. And please call back with the next update.
I shall. Thank you.
All right. Thank
Have
you, Maggie.
Great day. Bye.
You too. Isn't that great when somebody actually does, like, they come, they ask a question, they listen to what I say, they go do something, and it works? I like that. That if you want to get involved, 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. We're going to go straight back to the phones. Let's go to Kim in L.A. Kim, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. It's so great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just got your new book in the mail a couple days ago, and I'm really loving it.
Yay.
Okay, so I guess you want my question, right?
Well, technically it makes the time go quicker, but hey, we can chat. You know, how's the weather in LA? Oh, wait, I'm in LA. Never mind. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so this problem isn't going to seem like much of a problem to most people, but it's something that's kind of been dogging me. So I live in this really beautiful part of Los Angeles. It's really safe here. It's really gorgeous. Have good schools for my son. Live close to where my husband works. But the problem for me is I seem to have a lot of negative attitudes towards people who are really wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a artist, and I kind of grew up blue collar. And so I feel a little uncomfortable sometimes. And without getting into politics too much, you know,
mm-hmm.
I tend to lean one way, and the people around here tend to lean another way, and I try to be open-minded. And I know that, I mean, what keeps coming up to me over and over again is that a lot of the people that I meet, I mean, basically, I am wealthy. I live in a wealthy area, so I am wealthy. But it really, really upsets me when I meet people who seem to not understand at all what people who don't have money are going through, or that they only care about, or that seems like their main thing is just keeping their own money and not really trying to help other people, or you know, even talking disparagingly about people who don't have money, like they should just pull themselves up by their bootstraps or whatever. You know?
Yeah, for goodness sake, just get on with it.
And so I have all these other friends who are artists who, you know, I know how they live and I know what they do. And I mean, they live a totally different, in a different world. I don't really want to go live on the other side of Los Angeles where it's not as safe and the schools aren't as good and there's more smog and everything. But it's just living between these two worlds. I don't really feel in, you know, a place in either one of them. And it's a little bit, I'd like to be able to find a balance in there. I know it's coming from some old stuff, you know, about having ideas about an artist should struggle, or that, you know, rich people are like this. And I know that that's not a general statement. It's just, if I meet 20 people here who are nice and normal, it's the one person who says something really obnoxious that really emotionally upsets me. And I think you're talking about those emotional things today. So
there's all sorts of places we could go with this.
Okay.
So just I'm gonna go down a few, and we'll see what we can do that's useful.
Okay.
First thing that I want to, I've got four separate things here.
Okay.
First one. So we may well go over to the other side of the break. The first thing is, recognize the wealthy artists in your life.
Okay. I don't really know any.
Well, do some research.
I may be the worst.
do some research. Go on Google, because I know a lot.
Okay, good.
And start to look at how, you know, for example, I worked with somebody years ago who was a professional storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved what he did, but, you know, he felt he could only do it at, like, Renaissance festivals, and, you know, he had to be poor. But that was good, because poor is good. But,
right.
And I pointed out to him that most of the richest people on the planet are professional storytellers.
Right.
People like Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
People like Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the great salespeople, the great movie makers, these are storytellers.
Right.
Donald Trump, these are the people who our society rewards the most. And it's the same with artists. If you broaden your definition of artist even a little bit, you'll not only find wealthy painters and wealthy sculptors and wealthy actors and wealthy musicians and wealthy singers and wealthy guitar players, but you'll also find people who bring a real artistry to what they do that isn't conventionally considered the arts. So the first misconception that I think will be beneficial to you would be to start to really see, huh, there are wealthy artists and poor artists.
Right.
Oh, that's good to know. Because it means it's that the key to wealth is not artist. The choice isn't between being a poor artist or a wealthy sellout.
Right.
Because if that's the choice, well, of course, you're going to choose what you choose.
Right.
But if you get that's not a real choice, new possibilities open up. That's the first thing. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great. Second thing. We all live in separate realities. It's a function of our brains, the way our brains work. In order to make sense of the world, we have to delete and distort and generalize information. And we all will delete and distort and generalize information differently. Consequently, you and I can be looking at the same thing and listening to the same thing and come away with two completely different experiences. I took my daughter to a Broadway show this weekend, and we did not enjoy it. We thought it was terrible, to be honest, and we couldn't wait for it to end, but it didn't want to end. It went on, and every time we thought it was over, they played another song. And it was sort of like, I don't know if you saw Return of the King, the last of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where it kind of kept almost ending for an hour. It was like that.
Another battle
worse.
Scene, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So at the end, we're just ready to, you know, cut our throats and cut our losses and get out of there. And the lights come up, and the entire theater, except for me, my daughter, and the person next to us, stand up as one and give it a standing ovation. And we were sitting there wondering, how could 697 people be so stupid? Now, the truth is, they weren't and neither were we.
Right.
Our experience of the show was filtered through our thoughts.
Okay, yeah.
Their experience of the show was filtered through theirs. It just so happened that what we were thinking was not conducive to enjoying that show. And what they were thinking was. When you start to see that the difference between you and someone else is to do with which thoughts you dwell on in your head and which thoughts they dwell on in theirs, it's not that you suddenly have to take their thoughts on or they have to take yours on. Mm-hmm. You just get to see the innocence of it.
Right.
Until they start to see that it's their thinking that's creating their experience, there's nothing they can do to think any differently. And until you really see how your thoughts are creating the conflict and the separation between you and them, there's nothing that you would be able to do to make it better. It would be like if you were looking west and the answer was east. The problem isn't that you're not looking hard enough. It's just you're looking in the wrong place.
All right, so I need to look in the right place.
That would be a grand start. And the first place to look is up into your own head and start spotting what are the thoughts that I'm believing here that have me not treating this person like a fellow human being who wants to be loved and who wants to love and who wants to feel like their lives matter and who wants to feel like they make a difference and who wants to feel powerful enough to choose. Because I've never met a human being that those things aren't true for.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to just, have those that negative feeling towards people just because of some actions or some things that they might say or do.
And I'm going to say that the negative feelings aren't because of the actions or the things they say or do. They're because of the thoughts you have about those actions. Now, I'm not saying that means you have to approve them.
Right.
But it's actually all going on inside you. Can you hang out with me over the break?
Yes, I'd love to. Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to come back with more of Kim Bellin. You are next in the queue. If you want to get in the second half of the show, numbers to call 866-254-1579. From outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. If you'd like to participate in one of the coolest coaching raffles of all time, I think, go to supercoachbook.com before the 30th of March. 2010, and I will be back with more thought spotting and more Super Coach right after this break. Bye bye for now.
strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
Interestingly, what I think she was trying to say was 760-918-4300. It was a well-timed break. So we are going to go back to the phones in just a minute. Just before we do, I just want to remind you that you can find out more about the launch of my new book, Supercoach, at supercoachbook.com. And you can find out more about what we're up to on the web at geniuscatalyst.com. And we have a lot of free tips and videos and audios available there. But let's go back to Kim. Kim, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
You still hate rich people?
I don't hate them.
I'm teasing you, Kim. I'm teasing you.
My artistic friends that I hang out with, you know, like my musician friends that I hang out with, hate them. So that part of me, well, they don't hate them. They think they're uncool or just, you know, they don't understand, like, the real world. And then this other world that I live in, they don't really understand. I don't know. It's frustrating.
Here's what strikes me as the key to the whole thing.
Yes. Excellent.
It is, is any time you find yourself into a them and us
right.
kind of a situation, what you're inevitably doing is you're dismissing 9/10 of what a human being is and defining them by one characteristic that you either like or don't like.
Right.
So a rich person... What does that mean? Well, that probably means, somebody who has a number in their bank account that's bigger than whatever number we think rich means. Now, it's really interesting. When I do, I sometimes will do on seminars, I'll go around the room and I'll ask people, what's expensive and what's cheap? To actually give numbers. And you'll find in the room the range of things that people think are expensive and are cheap is hugely different.
Right.
And it's what I call the financial thermostat. That everyone is comfortable with a different level of money. So when we talk about rich people, and I don't mean when you talk about, I mean when any of us talk about rich people, there's some number in our head above which is rich, and then we have an opinion about somebody who has that much money because we forget that they're still a person. Now, similarly, okay, a lot of people will do the same thing with poor. And they will have an attitude, an angle of approach, a way of thinking, certain thoughts that they dwell on when somebody's bank balance or lifestyle is below whatever that level is in their little thermostat in their heads.
Right.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the ways to, quote unquote, change your attitude about wealthy people is to recognize that there's no such thing in the way that you're thinking about them. One of the things in Supercoach that I talk about, one of the 10 secrets is that our well-being is not dependent on our bank balance. Now, when people first hear that, they kind of go, oh, okay, great. So I don't have to have money or I wanted money and now it doesn't count. But in fact, there's a lot of implications to it. One is that indeed you don't have to wait until you have more money in order to be happy. That's one of the implications. Another is that indeed, even if you have a lot of money, that does not guarantee your happiness.
Right.
You know, again, non-contentious statements. But a third is who you are in the world and who you are as a person is not dependent on your bank balance.
Right.
It's dependent on how you show up as a person. The generalization, and again, we all make deletions and distortions and generalizations. That's why we all live in separate realities. That's why 697 people could make a mistake about that play. Right. Is we tend to generalize and go, anyone who thinks that way is this.
Right.
And if you could just catch that thought as it comes up and do your best to let it go, not to change it, not to do anything with it, but just to notice it. To spot it will lose its power over you. You will cease to see people as rich or poor, and you will start to just see people. And you may or may not notice with interest that they have more money or less money than other people.
Right. And I get what you're saying, and that's something I've been working on a lot over the past few years since I've been living here. And I keep thinking, like, oh, yeah, I'm finally, like, feeling comfortable here, and this is really great. And then someone will do or say something really to me, which seems really outrageous, and I'll get really, like, frustrated again. Like, I can't live here. And it's living in the polarity of the people. You know, it's like if I'm hanging out with one group of people, there's a lot of contentious statements going one way. It's, you know, it's sort of like the politics.
Why not just hang out with
Kim?
Why not just hang out with people you like?
Yeah, but they don't like each other.
Well, that's okay. So don't hang out with them at the same time.
Right.
In other words, I will guarantee. Right? I'll guarantee. I don't need to guarantee. Mm-hmm. Tell me if I'm wrong. There are people who have a lot of money that you like.
True.
There are people that don't have very much money that you like.
That's very true.
You're good. You know, I'm not saying you can completely avoid everyone you don't like, but you don't have to make your life about them.
Right.
I mean, I had some wonderful neighbors who were fundamentalist Christians. And really just lovely people, but their beliefs were very extreme and not aligned with my own.
Right.
And at one point we were having a very, just a frank conversation, with the guy. He's I was helping him pick up a sofa or something. And he said, "Do you have a problem with my beliefs?" And I said, honestly, a little bit, but just one. And he said, "What's that?" I said, "I don't really like the fact that you think that my wife and my kids and I are all going to hell."
Just that little thing.
And he looked at me like really surprised and said, "We don't think you're going to hell." Uh-huh. And I said, "Well, that's interesting because everything you've ever said to me about what it takes to not go to hell would suggest that actually, lovely as we are as a family, we're all damned." And he looked at me and he's still kind of curious and smiling and said, "There's still time." the fact is, right. Nice people are nice people. And if they happen to believe things you think are nuts, that doesn't have to be a problem. And
right.
Unpleasant people are unpleasant people. And even if they happen to agree with you, they're still unpleasant people.
True.
And if you're willing to stop trying to reconcile an artificial separation and just trust yourself to spend more time with the people you enjoy spending time with and less time with the ones you don't, it'll take care of itself.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Definitely.
And what it comes back to again and again is just spotting that thought that says there's a them and there's an us.
Right. I mean, I think it just comes back to the polarity and that's all around us in politics and everything. You know, it is that them and us all the time. And I just wish it.
Yeah, and you get to choose whether you want to actively contribute to that game.
Right.
Or whether you want to notice with interest that game is being played all around you as you make your life about connections and love and fun.
Okay, I like that.
Cool. We'll leave it there.
Okay.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
And it's funny. Look, you know, there are always going to be people who disagree with you. And in fact, if you know, there's a saying in certain business circles that, you know, if you're surrounded by people who agree with you, some of you are redundant. You know, there's a value in being around people who think differently to you. And you don't have to hang out with people you don't like beyond a certain point. I'm not saying you can completely avoid them, but on the whole, don't spend so much time with the people you don't enjoy their company and spend more time with the people whose company you enjoy, and you're going to have a grand old time. Let's go to Belen in Bakersfield. Belen, welcome to the show. Thank you for holding. What can I do for you today?
I have a question. I've had a business for about 13 years. Me and my ex-husband started and somehow ended up with the business. And for the past year, I'm like, either sell it and move on or stay with it. And it's a constant thought. And sometimes I like coming to work, sometimes I don't. So I'm just like, okay, so I need to start somewhere. I just don't know where.
Okay, sure. So let's start with this. What do you want?
What do I want?
Yeah, like if it was up to you, what would you do?
Well, actually, what I look at selling the business would be the financial freedom. I could pay all the debt that was left to me.
Okay, so one thing you want is to pay off some debt.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the options I have because it's a large amount.
Great. So one thing you have is paying off debt. What else do you want that relates to this decision of selling or staying?
The freedom. Also, it would totally disconnect me from whatever there is still between the old part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the one thing left because it was started by him and then I just kept it going and ended up in it.
Okay. So it so far, from what you've said, it sounds like kind of a no-brainer, and you know exactly what you want. And then my question becomes, so why aren't you selling it?
Well, I haven't found somebody that's willing to give me the money.
Okay, that would be one reason.
Right. And then the other is the people that work here. They've been working here for many years.
Mm-hmm. And you'd want so you'd want to arrange a sale where they were taken care of as best you could.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't see that happening.
Why? Are they terrible at their jobs?
No, it's an automotive business, a small business, so whoever takes it over, it would have to be an independent to have the financial part of the business work. Because
right.
of the employment, that's what's killing me. Because I have to pay. I don't do any of the work myself.
Right.
So this is a small business, and it would be a good business for somebody who's going to come in and own and operate it.
So let me, is Belen how you say your name?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Belen. Would I be right in saying that if I could wave my magic wand and arrange it so that you got a good price for your business and that the people who worked there were taken care of in the sense that their lives over the next few years got better, regardless of whether they stayed on or moved on? Would you want me to wave the magic wand for that, or would you want some amendments?
Oh, no, that would be great.
Okay, great. This is great, because now, see, once you're clear and honest about what you want, the rest is details. It's not the question you asked when you got here is, I'm not sure whether to sell the business or whether to stay. That's not the real question. The question is, what are some things that I can do to find a buyer for my business that will give me a reasonable price? And then what can I do for my employees that will set them up so if there are some who can stay, they can stay. And for the ones who can't, I've set up some sort of, coaching or outplacement service or some sort of thing to help them make the transition with ease and grace. Because I can guarantee you there will be people there who, much as obviously we all get concerned about money and we'll worry about it, will be as relieved to move on as you will.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily true that staying is winning for them either.
No.
It may be for some of them.
Uh-huh.
So if that were the question, so let's pretend the call has come back on and it's like, hey, Belen, hey, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today? And you say, well, I want to sell my business and I want to find a way of doing it where I get a good price and I take care of my people. Would that be a great call to have? Would that be a great conversation for us to be in?
Yes.
Great. So let's be in that conversation. So in terms of finding a buyer for the business, what have you done so far? What is there anything you know to do that you haven't yet done?
What I've done is got in communication with people that I know have been looking for a business.
Mm-hmm.
So I've let people know that I'm willing to sell and how I'm willing to sell it and what's in it. So that's what I've been doing is informing people that I know they're within the area of this business.
Okay.
So basically, that's it.
Okay, that's that. And from that, but when you say you informed them, you know, how did you do? Did you like take out a classified ad in the paper? Did you phone people? Did you meet with people?
I met with people. I know quite a bit of people within the business. So mm-hmm. I go and visit them, and let them know I'm interested in selling the business.
Okay. You know, and what kind of interest, if any, have you had back so far?
Some was good. It's like that's good, but it's not a good time for me. Other mm-hmm. is the money. It's too much for them,
mm-hmm.
and the money part doesn't work. Other ones, they would have to think about it because they already have another business or have a job that's mm-hmm. they feel secure in.
Right. So it sounds like nobody thinks it's stupid.
No.
Or right. So then it becomes a case of okay, now we've got a new thing to look at. It's like, okay, how could we create a way that somebody could take over this business that works for me and works for them? So in other words, when somebody says, I'd love to, but what comes after the but is what their concern is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can find a way of addressing that concern, you get to find out whether or not they really mean it when they say, I'd love to.
Okay.
So what we actually call it reversing buts. So if somebody says, well, I'd love to, but I just can't come up with that kind of cash right now. I might say back to them, so you can't come up with that kind of cash right now, but you'd love to take over the business. And if they go, well, yeah, then I'd go, well, great, let's work out how we can do what else we can do around the money, so the immediate cash flow isn't an obstacle.
Okay.
So in other words, we're not stuck just because somebody doesn't quite see their way clear yet, because it may be that there's all sorts of things that you can do in terms of arranging the financing where they don't need to pay for everything up front, for you to get out and for you to get that freedom from it, and for you to over time pay down the debts instead of maybe paying them all off in a lump, and so on and so forth. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so great. So that's that part of it. That would be the next step with that, is to go back to the people who've expressed interest and really explore with them. Okay, well, let's see how we could make this work. The second part is, hey, I really want to do my best by the people who've worked here. So how many employees do you have?
Three.
Okay, so great. So it's not like we're having to sort of figure out 800 people.
No.
Okay, so with those three people, we're going to make up names here, but let's take Bob first.
Mm-hmm.
You can decide which one Bob is.
Okay.
What's going to make the difference for Bob? What would make the difference for Bob?
Okay, for Bob would make a difference. Whatever he works has to work around his schedule of weekends, because he also had a DJ business on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be making sure the hour arrangement would work.
Okay, so if you were recognizing that Bob's going to have to take responsibility for his life, you know, so it's not like you're going to come in and save Bob, but you want to assist him in making this transition well, what do you think would be most useful to Bob?
I don't know.
So for example, you know, there are different things you can do. There are, you know, referrals to similar businesses.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, exploring, hey, do you still want to do this kind of work? Or given that there's an opportunity to do something different, you know, would you like to actually explore something different? Maybe there's some training you can begin to get to do something you'd rather do more. Maybe what you'd really like is to expand your DJ business so it's not just a weekend thing, but you can do it all the time.
Okay.
You know, what's Bob's dream? I'm not expecting you to know the answer to that.
Uh-huh.
But, boy, it's a great question to ask.
Yeah.
Because it's going to then really open the possibility up that this becomes the best thing that ever happened for them.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're hearing me.
Yes, I am.
All right. So, you know, that's what's next. And then you'll get feedback from the world. And then fine. You sit with that and you go, okay, well, this worked. This didn't. What's next? But what's nice to know is you really are clear about what you want. And there's this, my whole first book, You Can Have What You Want, is built on one fundamental notion, which is that when you get really clear and honest about what you want, everything in the universe conspires to help you get it. And just by, I don't know if you listen, we're listening at the beginning of the show to the caller I was talking about creating space,
mm-hmm,
for a learning center. It's the same thing. Once you've got that clarity of direction and you've created a little bit of space around it, you're going to start to notice over the next week or two opportunities for Bob, opportunities for the business, opportunities within conversations you've already had, opportunities that you couldn't have predicted. And if you're willing to just notice, spot those opportunities as they come up and step into them, not commit to them, but step into them, explore them, have those conversations, things are going to start to change and they're going to move in the direction that you want. And I can't tell you exactly how or exactly how long it will take, but that's how anything gets created. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Thank you for phoning, Bella.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You know, it's so often that we're actually looking at, we're asking ourselves the wrong question, or we're trying to make a false choice. Very often, I know when I've coached a few rock stars on who thought they wanted to settle down, it just happened that way. And when the choice that they presented to me was, you know, they couldn't understand why they couldn't commit, and it was like, well, I can have
you know, hot sex with lots of beautiful women, or I can be with somebody who maybe after a year, if we're lucky, we might not fight all the time and we might still have sex once a month. And I mean, literally, that was that in his mind, that was the choice. Well, if that's the choice, it's not that he's got a commitment issue. It's that he doesn't understand what the real choices were. He had no sense. He had no experience. He had no reference experience for what it's like to being in a loving, committed, long-term relationship. And the, all the good stuff. He knew the potential downsides. He had no idea of the levels of intimacy and connection and fun that can come out of really getting to know somebody over time and living with your best friend. Once he saw it as a real choice, it stopped being about, gee, why can't I commit? And became something that was very easy. And that's often the case when we're looking at choices and it seems really difficult. It's usually that you're not looking at the real choices. Let's go to Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today? Dan, you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I absolutely can. What's on your mind?
Okay. After listening to what you just said, about being clear and honest about what I want, my question to the call screener was, if where I'm investing my time and energy, and this may not be specific, I've been feeling unmotivated, and with the possibilities and just recognizing the possibilities, like you said about that one guy you just talked about coaching, would be some life strategies about sort of opening up to possibilities? And I like to make notes in a list, and then I can refer to that.
Wow. Okay. At this point, that's still too vague for me to answer. So can you pick one part of that and let's see what I can give you in the time that we have left.
Okay.
So like focus that down into a slightly more specific question.
Let's see. I don't know. So this is my problem. I have a lot of free time. I'm on disability and, I work on projects. I want to get involved in new types of projects. I've self-published poetry books, and I create artwork. But I just feel that I want to open the doors to new things, like writing about life strategies or doing different types of things, because I feel that I found closure with the stuff that I've done in the past, and it's sort of like I want to open a new door to something.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Dan, because we're running out of time, and I don't know how to answer that, just honestly.
Okay.
Stay on the line. Give the guys your address. We'll send you out a copy of Supercoach. When you've read through that, please, please, please feel free to call back into the show with a more specific question, okay?
Thank you, Michael. That's very kind of you. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. Let me just give you a little experiment to take home with you. Take a few minutes at some point today and just really listen to that conversation in your head. And if you like, you might want to write it down, like taking dictation from the voice inside your head. And just start to notice the somewhat random nature of the thoughts that are flying through your head. And if they seem very linear and organized, that's a sign that you've been thinking them instead of simply noticing them. And then as best you can, just allow each thought to pass through without clinging onto it and without taking it over for yourself. And if you do notice you've gotten caught up on one particular train of thought, just let it go or write it out to its inevitable conclusion and then jump off. And then during the day, if you notice yourself feeling down or a bit worried or unsettled, see if you can spot the thought that came just before that feeling. And as soon as you've spotted it, let it go. You can imagine it like a stick that's become stuck in a river. Just give it a little nudge and set it free. And just notice if a higher thought comes to take its place. I want to thank Steve and Joe in studio for another very smooth, very wonderful show. If you want to get a copy of Supercoach and participate in the great coaching giveaway, go to supercoachbook.com before the 30th of March 2010. And until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.